you're pushing yourself beyond what you feel is comfortable, which means you're going to have chapters of discomfort or feeling like I'm not really sure if I'm there yet. And sometimes that's true. Sometimes you're not there yet. And it's good to tune into that because then you know where you should be focusing on to improve.
Hesu Joe is a licensed marriage and family therapist and the head of clinical operations at BetterHelp, the world's largest therapy service, which connects people with professional, affordable, and personalized therapy virtually. In her role, she oversees a team of therapists to ensure the delivery of high-quality mental health services and liaises between the clinical and technical teams to enhance the platform's capabilities with expert mental health expertise. She shows a true commitment to making mental health services accessible and affordable and continues to advocate for authenticity and self-care, not only in her professional role, but in her personal life too. Get ready to hear Hesu's story and her biggest business secret. Coming up, you'll hear about Hesu's personal journey that led her to mental health advocacy. She discusses her early days at BetterHelp and how her role evolved. You'll hear how online therapy platforms like BetterHelp have made therapy more accessible and convenient. She highlights the significance of the client-therapist connection and trusting our instincts when choosing a therapist. And finally, Hesu reveals her biggest business secret. This is the Entrepreneurista podcast, presented by Socialfly.
It's the best business meeting you'll ever have, with must-hear real-life looks at how leading women in business are getting it done
and what it takes to build and grow a successful company.
It's beyond the gram,
with no filters,
no limits,
and plenty of surprises. Hey, Sue, I am so excited to sit down and have this conversation with you today because I talk with founders literally every single day, and something that comes up in conversation all of the time is really the importance of us all taking care of ourselves, our physical health, our mental health. It is so important. And as someone who has really focused on my own mental health over the years, I'm just so glad we can have this conversation out in the open, create as much awareness as possible for why this is so important. So thank you so much for spending some time with me this afternoon so we can help share this incredible message.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I definitely love talking about all of the aforementioned. I'm so glad that we're in a time and space that people are talking about these things, because it wasn't that long ago that it was almost like we weren't allowed to talk about this kind of stuff.
I know.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of it is because of social media and people feeling empowered to start having these conversations in the open, that it is more comfortable for people to start talking about it. So we're gonna dive into all of that. But before we do, I would love to hear more about your career background and what led you really to a career in mental health and leading at your current role at BetterHelp.
I always pause because I have been asked this kind of question before, and I think a lot of therapists would kind of pause too, because the truth of the matter for so many of us is that we decided to go into this kind of work because we ourselves had some kind of transformative experience. We ourselves have had some kind of trauma in our lives, and we have found some kind of healing, or we're still in that journey. And saying that is being vulnerable. It's kind of putting yourself out there and showing this piece of yourself that, like I just mentioned, not too long ago, none of us were really talking about. My parents are immigrants, so that comes with its own unique set and slew of challenges and issues, and also beautiful stories of our family. But that led to a lot of difficulties in all kinds of sense of that word for myself. And, I think that helped me grow up in, this juxtaposition of different cultures, of different ideology, philosophy of how to live. And that kind of fostered a natural interest and curiosity in just people and how different people can be, the ways that we think of things, the ways that we're motivated to do anything. And, I really just continued forward on a path that felt authentic to myself, which I feel like is going to be a theme of this conversation. And I really can't see myself doing anything very different than getting into it with other people. And getting into it, what I mean by that is just, you know, accompanying somebody on their own journey to self-discovery, because I think that is the foundation of living a healthy and fulfilling life, is knowing who you are, loving who you are, and sharing that with people around you.
Absolutely. I could not agree more. Did you know, you know, when you were going into college that this was the path you were going to pursue?
No. And I haven't really met a lot of people in my life that they now in adulthood are doing the things that they thought they were going to be doing at that age, at 18. So people out there that are listening that are a little bit younger, if you think you know what you're going to be doing in 20 years from now, I mean, it's great if you end up there and that's what you're manifesting and you're putting all your energy into, but it's also very typical if you end up doing something very different. And the truth is, when I was 18, when I was going into college, I had no idea what I wanted to do with my life. I felt very unsure of that. And I didn't even know what I was going to be doing after I finished college. So that journey kind of started even after school.
And I feel like that is totally normal. I feel like society today, putting all this pressure on 18-year-olds who are many of them going to college, and it's like, sign your life away to go to college and pick this one or two majors that you're going to focus on for the rest of your life. It's like, no, it's like, it's still that opportunity to explore and learn about ourselves. And I tell people all the time, especially like college students who will reach out to me for mentorship or internships. I'm like, just get experience and nothing is permanent. You know, give yourself that grace to just learn and keep going and keep growing. And you don't have to figure it all out the day you turn 18 and potentially go to school. So I'm with you on that.
100%. And, you know, when I went to school, which was some time ago, online therapy didn't even exist. So it's hard to even say, like, I knew what I was going to be doing because I didn't know that it was out there. I mean, drawing another similarity to this, software engineer. This job and this title is so ubiquitous today. But when I went into school, it wasn't as common. It existed, but it certainly wasn't what it is today. So it could be that people starting college right now are going to end up in a career that doesn't even exist yet. So that's really interesting to think about.
Absolutely. So what was the path that led you to ultimately land to start working at BetterHelp?
Well, I was already a therapist when I had heard about BetterHelp, and I, you know, was trained in a more traditional sense. I was doing therapy in person in a clinic. I had also been meeting with clients in schools, K through 12, college students, dabbled in residential day treatment facilities. I did all kinds of stuff trying to figure out where my world and my fit was. And in my most recent job before BetterHelp, you know, I just got to a point of wanting to do something a little bit different beyond the 20 to 25 people I was working with. And this is not too uncommon for therapists in general. At a certain point in your career, you do find more interest in, for example, fostering other therapists' careers, mentoring, supervision, management, that kind of thing. And I was still very green, ultimately, when I found an online ad, which is not surprising for BetterHelp and what it is. I basically was scrolling on social media at some point, and somebody that I went to graduate school with had posted about BetterHelp. Not like songs of praise even, more a post of skepticism. Like, what is this thing? Like, is this a detriment to our field? So even at that time, which was now for me almost 7 years ago, you know, people were very unsure about this new thing that was coming onto accessibility for a lot of people. Like, telemedicine isn't new. Being able to talk to a nurse practitioner on the phone and get a prescription sent to your pharmacy, that's been around for quite a long time. But the idea of doing therapy online about 7-10 years ago was still very unusual for therapists to be thinking about. But I saw something that somebody posted about the skepticism. So I go to the website and I see that they're hiring. And I thought, you know, I've been kind of in this place of wanting to try something different. And this is as different as I could possibly get by still using my degree, by still using my license. So I joined this small little startup, and it truly was very small at that time. There were about 20 of us. And I did not know what I was getting myself into, but I knew that I wanted to just do something different. I am a San Jose local. I grew up here, which is in Silicon Valley. And having been in the mental health public sector system for quite some time, in the area that I grew up, in the area that, you know, birthed so much technology and social media that we know today, I wasn't able to reconcile within myself why we weren't tapping into technology, why we weren't using this very up-and-coming thing called smartphone at the time. Like, why isn't this more part of the way that we're trying to deliver therapy? And then I see this post and it's like, okay, somebody beat me to it. I'm not a business person. An entrepreneur out there decided to figure something out or try to figure something out there. And I just wanted to join and see what happened. And the rest of it is kind of history, as they say.
Yes. What was your role there when you first started? And can you share more about your role today and what you're leading?
Well, for folks that have worked in a startup-like setting and, you know, entrepreneurs, everything feels like a startup at first. It's small, it's scrappy, meaning everybody coming in, you may have a title, but you actually wear 10,000 hats. And so I came in as a customer service agent. That's the position that I saw was open. They weren't even calling for a therapist for that role, but it was within a, at the time, what I was thinking still is like an unorthodox, but still mental health company. And I wanted to take some time to just like figure out what this was, take a little break from doing direct service. But ultimately, I actually maintained a practice on BetterHelp anyway. You know, that shifted and morphed. Like I said, we were really small at the time. So I had a really unique opportunity at BetterHelp to build a team, hire a bunch of awesome people. And something that a former manager said to me years ago that really stuck with me is, you know, to be a good hiring manager means that you find and you bring on people that you think are smarter than you. And so that's what I've been trying to do. And I have an amazing team. And they are all licensed therapists as well. They also have practices on BetterHelp. And we do a ton of different things, including but not limited to quality assurance of the services being provided on the platform. We work very closely with pretty much every department just to make sure that other departments have access to a clinical lens or a clinical frame. You know, our product, the features that people have access to, the tools, the different options. This is stuff that gets talked about with technical people as well as the therapists working here. And ultimately, you know, my role, I see it as just kind of liaising between the mindset of a therapist and even a client and those that work in technology platforms like engineers, product managers, data analysts, marketing people. And so far, I feel like it's been going pretty well.
Well, you've been there 7 years and you've seen a whole evolution of a business from, you said, just a few people to now. How many people are on the team now today?
A few hundred. I don't even know. I don't know.
It's amazing to be able to be part of that type of rapid growth. And clearly, the services and what you are offering is very needed, or your company would not have grown that quickly over the past couple of years. Now, we do have a lot of members of our Entrepreneurs community that have private practice therapy businesses, like that's their business. For those members of our community that have those private practice businesses, are they able to also offer services on BetterHelp? Or as a therapist, do you have to be on BetterHelp essentially as a full-time therapist for BetterHelp?
That's a great question. And I say that, I say that all the time, so many good questions, but I say that because the person that's listening that might have interest in becoming a therapist in the first place, I do want to put it out there. It's such a great career for those that have the interest in this because you can do so many different things. You're not stuck to one thing. And that's kind of the philosophy in so many settings that you'll find as a therapist too. People understand that you might have some clients here, some clients there. You might teach, you might consult, you might do some other things. So no, you don't have to be strictly on BetterHelp. We have many practitioners that are also, you know, teaching or also having different private practices of their own. There are some benefits to being on BetterHelp, like the convenience for the therapist, the ease of access, not having to deal with billing. But there's plenty of pros of having your own private practice separate from this too. And I truly think and believe that there is plenty of room in the world for all of it. I'm personally, I'm not trying to be part of something that's going to replace all kinds of other therapy at all. It's adding another option that a lot of people didn't have access to in the first place.
Absolutely. A few years ago, even like pre-pandemic, I was doing virtual therapy sessions with a therapist because even just like the convenience of being able to just hop on a video with a therapist and not be commuting. I was in New York City at the time and having to get to an office, that can be stressful. So to just be able to pop on a video to be able to connect with a therapist it's like, how did it take so long for all of these things to develop? It's amazing what the platform does and you're able to do when you're able to connect so quickly. Up next, Jesus shares the importance of self-care for therapists, and she discusses her own self-care practices. So I would love to hear more about how when you were, you know, practicing as a therapist and you're working with clients and patients and, of course, helping them and hearing all of their stories, like all of that, I feel like you can internalize and it can become really hard to be able to take care of your own mental health. How do you make sure you're continuing to take care of your own mental health while helping so many other people with theirs?
I will say you are describing something that is very pervasive in all helping professions. People might have heard of a phrase, compassion fatigue, and that's something that we refer to often, or burnout. It's just the depletion of the empathy that you're providing to other people. And I use the word depletion because then it helps us see that it's something that can be filled, but it doesn't just fill by itself. It doesn't just fill automatically. It's something that we have to take an active effort to participate in. Our own life. So, you know, self-care, of course, is something that comes up quite often. And this is something to me that extends far beyond the occasional chocolate treat or the occasional bath bomb. And I do enjoy those things. But self-care does not just look like relaxation and, you know, boosting dopamine levels. It's also about going out of your way to provide your body, your spirit, your mind with the nourishment that it needs. And sometimes going out of your way, it's in the phrase itself, it doesn't feel good. It's out of the way. So I put quite a concerted effort into taking care of myself, understanding that if I become completely depleted, I can't show up for clients, I can't show up for my team, and I certainly wouldn't be able to charge forward in addressing complex problems and trying to figure really complicated things out with other people. So, you know, I try really hard to behave like somebody that I would love and respect. I try to speak and show up in relationships like somebody that I would love and respect, because it's very difficult to love somebody that's behaving like someone that's disrespectful. I also try to treat myself like somebody I love and respect. And we have, at this point, I think, heard this over and over again, some variation of treating yourself as well as you treat other people that you love. And I really, really try to adopt that, because once I really shifted my intentions around that, I did notice a difference. That's how you maintain a level of self-esteem, is to be someone that you can feel good about, to be someone that you would want to spend time with. And I talk to and about myself like somebody I love and respect. I respect myself. And that came from active effort, because it wasn't always like that. It's like so many other people out there, it was a long journey to get to this point, and it's an ongoing journey, and I have step backs. I have plenty of struggles of my own with things like imposter syndrome, or, you know, beating myself up if I make a mistake, do something wrong. And, you know, as people progress in their career, sometimes it can feel like the stakes are higher at a certain point, and that stress can become debilitating if you don't handle it by taking care of yourself.
What are some of those things that you actually do and implement to take care of yourself? And what are recommendations that you share with others?
Mm-hmm. There are the pillars of wellness, as I call them to myself, is to eat well. And I don't just mean like eating stuff that tastes good, because unfortunately, a lot of the stuff that tastes good, a lot of the stuff that makes us feel really good is not actually very good for our bodies. But that stuff once in a while is going to be important, because I think deprivation leads to other issues. So, you know, just remembering to nourish your body, and sometimes nourishing your spirit means having a piece of chocolate here and there, but really eating stuff that is going to fuel you not just eating stuff that's going to make you feel happy, because happiness is also very temporary. And another pillar is to sleep well. So we've all heard of sleep hygiene, and I'm finding the older I get, the more important it is to get some solid rest. Now, there's a lot of research now that's showing that not everybody actually needs to sleep 8 hours in a row. So it's about figuring out what kind of sleep schedule, sleep cycle makes sense for you. Power naps can be really effective. I don't really nap, but I have figured out what kind of sleep I need, how much sleep I need. And then it's an active, you know, real focused energy at night, because I feel like I'm naturally a night owl, and it can be very difficult to overcome that when the world functions more in the morning. So far, to summarize, eating well, sleeping well, and then another pillar is to move. And I say movement because I could say I do yoga, I lift weights, I do cardio. Like, these are the things that I do, but you got to figure out what works for you, what's sustainable, what's enjoyable, what makes you feel strong, what makes you feel balanced, what makes you feel flexible. It's important to move. Our bodies are evolved to be moving all day, but modern society keeps us largely hunched over a desk, and that's pretty unnatural for ourselves. So it could look like incorporating just more regular movement into your day, or carving out specific time to get that in. And then beyond these pillars, these are foundational, like totally necessary in my humble opinion. Things to do is to nurture a strong support system. So of course you can have your support system built in at work. If you're an entrepreneur working on your own, that can be challenging. So then it becomes even more important to nurture the relationships you have with your friends, with your family. If you don't have access to any of that, then it's about building a community for yourself, which is not easy. It's very hard. And that's what I'm talking about, that self-care means going out of your way and doing stuff that's not easy. A regular practice of introspection, which can look and feel different for all kinds of different people. For me, it looks like meditation. It looks like journaling. It looks like therapy sometimes. And I say sometimes because I don't think everybody needs to be in therapy forever. It's something that's there as a tool for you. And then, you know, I really, really think that we all benefit from some time in nature once in a while. I think there's some quote that I'm going to botch right now because I don't remember the wording of it, but like it says something like the human spirit needs time to be in nature that has been untouched by man. And of course, it's like being touched by you once you get there. But I think the idea of it is to get yourself back into what is natural, what is where we came from. And that often gives a lot of perspective. And I think nature, wilderness can give us a lot of healing.
Oh my gosh, I love everything that you just shared and happen to agree with every single point that you just shared. And a lot of what you just shared, I learned years ago in therapy. I was doing CBT therapy and having challenges. And this was a lot of the advice that I was given as well. And when you shared that, you know, this can look different for every single person. And just because, you know, you see someone posting on social media that they're going hiking and that's what they're doing to get onto nature, and if you don't like that, like, that's okay. It's you do what you feel is best for yourself, for your body, and what's going to nurture you. And the other thing is that so much of this, like you said, like, it is work. You have to put in the effort to be able to take care of yourself. Something that really helped me was just scheduling everything. Like, if I don't put it in my calendar, it's like you say you're going to do something, but if it's not like written in the calendar, for me at least, it doesn't happen. And I know a lot of entrepreneurs can probably relate to this as busy business owners that we're trying to do a ton of different things. And it's a lot of times it can be easier to take care of other people, our team, our families, and then we become last. But we have to remember to put ourselves first, because if we're not taking care of ourselves, we can't take care of our businesses. We can't take care of our families. We have to be able to show up as our best selves. And that does require work, because life is work, you know? It just, you can make it easier with different tools and different practices, right? So I would love to hear more about how you have really seen the evolution of online therapy really being able to help women, especially women who are running businesses, very busy, and really need that extra support.
You know, online therapy platforms, part of the marketing shtick for a lot of them is true. It's about accessibility. It's about convenience. And for some people, the importance of having a discrete option. for a busy entrepreneurista and entrepreneur, I imagine carving out 2 hours, 2.5 hours, sometimes 3 hours to get to your therapy appointment. And I'm giving it that much time because if you're in a busy metropolitan area with traffic, with looking for parking, just the effort to get out of your house or your home, like these kinds of things add up and it ends up being a couple of hours. And for someone that's extremely busy, a couple of hours is very precious in any given day. So I do think that's one obvious thing is that the online therapy platforms just make it so easy to get connected with a therapist. Like the modern entrepreneur, I imagine, is spending a lot of time on their phone or their computer or both. So you're already on this device, and through online therapy platforms, you can meet with your therapist on the same platform that you're having all your back-to-back Zoom meetings anyway. And it's, I think, allowing people that have often brushed aside self-care, saying, I don't have time for it. It's kind of creating more of a culture of there's no excuse like that anymore, because you certainly have time to continue sitting in the computer that you have been sitting at. And, you know, I think bringing this kind of service online also just makes it a little bit more familiar. Going into a doctor's office, most of us are not doing that on a super regular basis. And so, you know, like one thing I think about when you go to your doctor's office for a checkup or any kind of appointment, they actually almost always make you wait a little bit in the waiting room. It could be that you're early and you still have to wait. And I don't actually know if this is for sure because I haven't fact-checked this, but I made up a story that they're having you sit there and wait because so many people are really nervous to be there. So when they check your heart rate and your blood pressure, it's not reading accurately because you're so nervous to be in this new space. But sitting there in the waiting room is actually a way for them to get you into more of a baseline. So when they read that stuff, it's a little bit closer to where you would be at a resting heart rate. I don't know if that's true, but that's what I've told myself. And with therapy, I have noticed a bit of a shift, right? When I used to meet with my clients in an office, I would have like this, for some clients, like the need for some kind of transitional adjustment. The first few minutes, some kind of like equivalent of small talk, getting somebody into the headspace, getting them transitioned from like commuting into the office and then being able to get into it, which means you don't actually have the full time. You're accounting for some of this like transitioning into the session time. But when somebody's at home or in their office, they're somebody somewhere that's very, very familiar to them, they're ready to kind of start the session right away because they're already regulated. They didn't have to move and get out of the flow that they have from the day, especially when they're in their home. They're in a setting that they're in control of, and the power dynamic feels a little bit different. When you're coming into a therapist's office, which I really, really love in-office therapy, so I'm not really trying to say anything disparaging about that at all, but there is a different dynamic there when you're meeting somebody that came to you versus you are really meeting them in their home.
Yeah, no, that makes complete sense. I never thought about it like that. And I definitely, the commuting, yes, and all the time that it takes, but what you just said with the power dynamic, and then it, you're taking so much time to start to feel comfortable, you don't have as much time during the session to get to while you're there. So I definitely love that you shared that. Coming up, you'll hear all about Hesu's personal experiences in dealing with imposter syndrome and her tools to overcome it and build self-confidence. Hesu, something that I talk to so many founders about, especially on this podcast, that comes up, I would say, almost every episode of this show is this feeling of imposter syndrome. So many of us as founders are building these businesses and we get to this place that we've never been to before because we haven't grown a business before, many of us. And now, you know, the spotlight is on us. We're trying to navigate all of these new things. We feel like we have to, you know, appear a certain way, but inside we're like, wait, is this me? Like, did I deserve this? Did I do this? How, and I know you mentioned before feeling imposter syndrome as well. How do you recommend founders that are building businesses that have this feeling get through these feelings of imposter syndrome?
Ooh, this is a tricky question for me because like you said, it's something I struggle with. So I think with any topic, it can feel challenging to like even try to adopt the mindset like, I am an authority in this space. I've talked about this. I've studied this. And yet I still struggle with it so much. So sometimes I feel like, am I being authentic in trying to help people work through this? But I will say there's lots of research out there on imposter syndrome. So if people want to look into it and what research finds right now, maybe it's because of reporting and how that works. But at least what we see is women tend to struggle with imposter syndrome at much higher rates. And I think everyone can come up with their own reasons for that. But ultimately, I think we can all say like, oh, that's not surprising. And so when we come to that conclusion, like not surprising, more women are struggling with it. Why? Why? And largely, I think it's due to societal expectations. It's the way that we're raised, the way that we're kind of programmed to believe certain things about ourselves, certain things about women and capabilities. So when we think of it that way, then at least it starts chipping away at the idea that there's something uniquely wrong with you. It's actually a collective experience that we're all going through. And when we remember that more women are struggling with this, I think it's important to challenge any kind of assumption that it's because men are more capable. I think a lot of us, when we sit down and think about it, it's like, oh, no, it's not because of that. But part of us must, some of us might be thinking this, right? So there's a lot of different things that people can do to move through this. But one of the things that I think is foundational, which is a little bit more philosophical in nature, not something that you can just do overnight. It's not a quick tip. And you and I are talking about like a lot of these things take work. None of it is easy access, unfortunately, but it's about finding the truth of who you are. And I mentioned earlier that I felt that a theme of this conversation was going to be around authenticity. And that's the case here. You know, it's about figuring out who you are, because this will allow you to live in that truth. And it will allow you to find success that's aligned with the truth of who you are versus trying and grasping to reach for success for being someone or something that you're not. And, you know, like working on self-esteem can look like so many different things, but this is going to be important to move through imposter syndrome. You know, remembering that people that don't experience any of these feelings at all often aren't more capable. You know, if you're experiencing some feeling or some variant of the thought of, I'm not really sure if I'm supposed to be doing this. Like, I don't know if people realize that I don't really know what I'm doing. You do know enough to get you to that position. And we as people are pretty good at being able to identify when we don't like the behavior of somebody else. You would not have been put in a position of leadership, in a position of authority, if other people didn't think that you had some kind of capability. And even if you did get there off of some false pretense, people will figure out fairly quickly if you don't have that competence, so you wouldn't be there. And I know that's difficult to internalize and say, okay, I must be capable and that's why I'm here. That it's kind of difficult. So it's really about focusing on yourself and not trying, I say it's easier said than done, trying not to be too concerned with what other people are thinking. But ultimately, like in so many different settings, what other people thinking does become important. And something that I've kind of come to terms with is if I get to a place and people decide that I'm not the right fit for whatever it is, then it's not the right fit for me. And that's how I want to live my life, is being true to who I am. And if I'm not feeling like I'm good enough for something, then I want to challenge myself to educate myself, to learn more in that space, seek out the kinds of development, whether that's personal or professional, to get to a place where I feel more confident about where I am. And you know, it's about talking out your challenges and your problems with mentor figures. It's, I think, always a very good idea to surround yourself with people that you think are smarter than yourself, like-minded individuals, and people that think very differently than you. Like staying in a vacuum of the things that confirm your own thoughts is a great way to perpetuate biases, be less aware of how those biases may impact the way that you navigate relationships or communication with people. So really, like, live your life and open yourself to different perspectives, to different experiences. And when you have such a large breadth of beauty in this world, I think it just kind of equips you to take feelings of imposter syndrome with grace. I don't think those feelings truly ever go away 100% for somebody that's striving for more, because you're pushing yourself beyond what you feel is comfortable, which means you're going to have chapters of discomfort or feeling like I'm not really sure if I'm there yet. And sometimes that's true. Sometimes you're not there yet. And it's good to tune into that because then you know where you should be focusing on to improve.
For founders that are experiencing these feelings or just in general want to start working with a therapist, how do you recommend someone go about deciding, you know, let's say they're on your site and they're looking through therapists, like how to decide what type of therapy to do or how to figure out, you know, which therapist to select or if someone's a great fit? Any recommendations you can share there?
I think research goes a long way. Before you even start looking for a therapist, you might want to start just researching what you're going through. Thanks to the internet and very powerful search engines, I'm kind of reflecting myself, thinking like, I've never not found what I'm looking for when I Google something or when I put something into a search engine. So it could be that you're struggling with stress, anxiety, and some of the symptoms look like changes in appetite or you're not sleeping well. So if you just start looking into the symptoms themselves, then you will be presented with tons of literature online. And of course, remembering that you can't believe in everything that you think, but you want to figure out what your reputable sources are. And these things will help guide you to find the right keywords that you're looking for in terms of what kind of therapist to find. Ultimately, like most of the research actually says that of all the different types of therapy, the most important factor is not what kind, but what kind of relationship forms between you and your therapist. And this research finding is actually ingrained into therapists themselves. It's like you can study theory and you can become an expert in different kinds of techniques to use with your clients or interventions or strategies. But ultimately, it's about that relationship. So really, for a person, do some research, look for the keywords, but also listen to intuition, tune into your gut. Like, do you feel safe with this person? So sometimes you can do as much research as you can, but ultimately, it's about like connecting with someone and kind of just like vibing them out, talking to them, having an initial consultation call, and also remembering that if it doesn't work out with that person, it's not a waste of time. It's part of your exploration. It's part of your investment into yourself. And you can move on to another therapist if that person didn't work out for you. So it's a lot of trial and error, which as an entrepreneurista is not new to you.
Very true. Yes. Most things don't work out on the first try. You have to keep going at it and be patient and figure it out. So definitely great advice and something that I've experienced over the years too. You know, I think it definitely took me going to a few therapists before I found the therapist that I really like clicked with and vibed and felt that comfort in that relationship. And at the end of the day, life, business, everything, it's all about relationships. That's how we're all able to learn and move forward. And surrounding yourself with really great people and community really is the key to absolutely everything. So thank you so much for sharing all of this incredible information. I think it is so helpful to be having these conversations and really just normalizing like how awesome therapy is and how important it is. And as you said, it's one piece of the toolkit, right? And we need to be sure that we're taking care of ourselves physically, eating well, going outside, moving our body, exercising, and doing the things that we really need to do to take care of our mental health. And working with therapists is one piece of that puzzle. And I know we're going to be talking all about this coming up at our Founders Weekend Wealth and Wellness Retreat in Orlando. And our community is so excited to be there to have these conversations. And we're so grateful for you and for BetterHelp for being part of the weekend and the conversation and really just shedding a light on how important all of this is. We have to be taking care of ourselves, taking care of each other, and all being there for each other. So thank you, Jesus, so much for your time today and sharing all of this with us.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thanks again so much for having me.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. I'm Stephanie, and this is the best business meeting I've ever had. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Entrepreneurista Podcast. This episode was presented in partnership with BetterHelp.
Hey, thanks for listening and leaving us a 5-star review. We'd really appreciate it. And we'd love to stay in touch with each of you. You can listen to all of our latest episodes at entrepreneurista.com
and connect with us on Instagram at Entreprenistas. We'd also love to invite you to join the Entreprenista League, our private membership community for trailblazing women. You can head over to entreprenista.com/the league. We'll see you there. Wishing you a productive week ahead.